Okay, great. Thank you all for joining us today for this month's IRI Sustainability Thought Leader interview. And I want to give a big thank you to Sheila Remus, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Sheila is Vice President Environmental Sustainability at Boeing. So this interview is an element of IRI's sustainability community. And this community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. As a member of this community, you can access facilitated roundtable discussions, which we normally have on the fourth Friday of the month, but we are completely thrown off because of the Thanksgiving and Veterans Day holidays this month, so we won't be having one this month. And our dates are all messy because of Thanksgiving here, so that's why we're not meeting on the fourth Thursday of the month like we normally do. But anyway, we also do case studies, and I should have one coming out for you shortly, and then interviews like this. And next month, I will be talking to BASF's Director of Sustainability. And I'll sign everybody up for updates if you haven't already gotten those. Few housekeeping items, one more boring thing to get through. This session is being recorded, and you will get a link to the recording. And we will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all your questions until the end, and we'll open the floor to questions. And you can either type your question into the chat, or you can, and I'll read it out for you, or you can jump off of mute and come on camera and ask your question face to face. All right. All that's out of the way. Sheila, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Lee. And thanks for having me back because I think I joined you a few years back. So, anyway, this is great.
You talked to our CTOs a while ago too, and they really enjoyed it. So I had to open it up to everyone. So, can you tell us a bit about your background and about your role at Boeing?
Sure. So, my background from an educational standpoint is engineering, like a lot of people at Boeing. And so through my career at Boeing, I've mostly been in sales, marketing, kind of on the commercial side of the business. But my recent job, my job prior to this position, was in Boeing Commercial Airplane Strategy. So I led that group, and subsequently, part of that portfolio was actually environmental strategy. And so as a company, as we've kind of evolved into what's important and what do we need to talk to our, constituents and stakeholders about, sustainability rose to the top. And so as we were forming our organization at the corporate level, my team that had been focused on it in the company really kind of moved over to become that core part of the sustainability team. So that's kind of my background. In addition to being engineering and mostly working in the commercial space, I've also had a couple of different roles at airlines as well. So always on commercial, but from both a technical and commercial standpoint.
Okay. All right. So can you set the stage for us and tell us where sustainability sits at Boeing and how it cascades down? Because it's a big organization.
It is. Yeah, no, it's a great question too, because I know when we first formed the organization, I was seeking the perfect structure, right? So I was asking a lot of different companies, how are you set up and how are you formed? So for ourselves, we're actually under the Boeing corporate CEO. And so my boss is the Chief Sustainability Officer. And so he reports directly into Dave Calhoun. Under that, we've got my team that really focuses on product services and, working across all of our business units on what do we need to do to meet sustainability goals as the Boeing company. And then we've got another part of the organization that is set up for internal, which includes the reporting aspects of, the function of sustainability. So it's kind of, if to keep it simple, we kind of have the inside outside group. My group is outside and externally facing, and what we're focused in on is a lot of the technology. So we partner closely with our engineering teams on technology development, any kind of, corporate development, investments that we might make in different companies we're partnered with them on. So most recently, in the last couple of years, we did a big investment in WISC, which is a part of sustainability, but it's also a part of the technical roadmap for autonomous for the Boeing company. So it really has multiple, like a lot of things in sustainability, it has multiple angles to be able to focus in on. And so we're a piece of that. And then we also, a lot of our work actually works with, is focused in on our customers, as well as our scaling of sustainable solutions, which would be SAF and various, you know, other forms of market-based measures that the aviation industry needs to decarbonize.
Okay. And so you mentioned that, you know, you were looking at different structures. Can you talk about how Boeing's approach to sustainability has evolved in recent years?
Yeah. Like I said, the sustainability for us is actually really broad. So it covers both the environment as well as the social aspect and then the transparency aspect. So we had published a number of different reports in the different silos of the company, but really bringing it all together under one function was really important. And so providing that transparency in one place about all of our social initiatives that we'd been having, but we hadn't been talking about very transparently. And we weren't actually probably talking about them in the way that the various reporting and assessment agencies were wanting to see it. So that was a concerted effort to bring that together and to put together a sustainability report. So we've just published our third one. So that in and of itself it was a journey. It continues to evolve. It'll evolve again next year as we move forward. But that's kind of job number one, is bringing it from the business unit level all the way up to the corporate level was a big piece of it. And then as we've kind of matured as an organization, trying to figure out how you push it into the organizations. One of the challenging conversations is that everybody wants to try something new. And so sustainability is a really new topic, but fundamentally it really isn't. So especially at Boeing, you know, everything we do is about aerodynamic efficiency, fuel burn improvements, and all of those pieces, noise reduction, all of those are environmental topics. And so trying to make sure that people see themselves in what we're doing and the goals that we're trying to achieve has been really important. And it's a journey, you know, having 160,000 people get on board with you're actually doing something in the sustainability realm if you're working on quality, because reducing waste is a sustainability thing. First time quality in what you produce, how you evaluate things, that is sustainable. And looking at what we do for our employees as well. So from the four walls standpoint, safety is about sustainability, health and safety of our employees, and then health and safety of the employees that utilize our products once they go out into the world. So it's been a journey. I would say we're not, you know, 100% perfect at this point, but I think a lot more people understand it and are curious about it. And that is, to me, you know, job number one, is to get people asking questions and, you know, bringing forward ideas. One of the biggest groups that we partner with is our product development groups and our strategy groups, because those folks are setting the stage for what our future products and services do. So that's another community that we stay tightly integrated with. And that was an easy connection, I would say, in contrast to having everybody across the company really see that you are in the sustainability function. You just don't know it. It's kind of like HR, you know, we're all part of the human resources of a company. But this one is one that I think is exciting that people want to join. So I think that's great. But then we just have to, you know, make sure that we bring them into those conversations.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of diving deeper into that, how have you brought together all of the existing work for this more holistic approach? Because as you say, 160,000 people, probably as many, if not more, different projects and approaches. How have you, integrated all of that? That's a lot.
A lot of it is bringing together existing forums and putting it under an umbrella that really can help people see that they're working on the same goals. What we found before is that perhaps people were working on quote unquote sustainability projects, and maybe they weren't getting funded or there weren't enough awareness. And so even doing the inventory of who's working on what and bringing those groups together, I know that our technical team just did that in the last couple of days in the Seattle area. So, you know, you don't know what everybody's working on. And a lot of times in a huge company, you have a lot of duplication. So that's a challenge. And now that it is something that we're very focused on, I think getting those duplication and actually then bringing them together allows you to scale and move faster. But coordination is a challenge, always a challenge in a big company. But I think, you know, giving people permission and finding those forums to have folks share what they're working on are really critical parts of you know, getting everybody aligned. Right now, we kind of have it organized in the business unit functions, if you will. And so we've got different focal points throughout the company that really channel that energy. So we have somebody in services that channels it from a functional standpoint, and the same thing in our defense business. A lot of what we end up focusing on is our commercial business, just due to the fact that, you know, that's the volume and that's the carbon impact in the world. So we've got a larger team of people spreading out and across the company focused on that.
Okay. And so how are you engaging customers and other stakeholders in the aviation industry in general?
A lot of it is through the various forums and working with organizations like IATA and ICAO and A4A and AEA. So all of the alphabet soup of aviation, as well as NASA and AIAA. I can go on with all of the different acronyms, but so those are usually very good forums for bringing together people who care and people who are interested. And then the next, you know, kind of the next click down of engagements are really one-on-one. And so we have a lot of one-on-one engagements with customers. And oftentimes it's, as you know, on their pull, because everybody's in a different place in the journey. As you know, as you can imagine, all of our customers are very global, and every part of the world has a different point of view or a different speed that they're actually working at. So we get pulled into various, you know, either their campaign conversations or pre-campaign curiosity conversations. And those are really good. I think those ones actually probably are more powerful because you're really tackling things at a personal level or at that company's level. So trying to figure out, how do you help them with this puzzle? Because it's, nobody can do it alone. And so we view ourselves as a partner in the journey for our customers, as well as even, you know, our suppliers, and, you know, kind of widening the net, because we all can find solutions. And even our supply chain is a really great example of, they're probably further ahead. Some of our suppliers are probably further ahead than we are. So there's learning across the spectrum that can be done. And so that's kind of exciting. You know, normally you're in your little silo, and this is very, very much like safety in aviation. It's a full team sport beyond aviation.
Oh, that's great. And I feel better about flying now. Everyone's working on it.
Or at least we're all talking about it. Hopefully we're going to get some things done. So,
you know, I can't ask for more. So I understand, you know, you've got these industry-wide efforts around sustainability. Can you tell us a bit more about those and about Boeing's role in them?
Sure. So one of the, there's a number of industry, but I'm going to start outside the industry, some of the things that we've been working on for quite a while. So with the World Economic Forum, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we joined the Clean Skies for Tomorrow effort. And that was bringing together not just aviation companies, but also fuel companies, corporate accounts, consultants, and really trying to figure out how are we going to unlock the green premium? How are we going to get sustainable aviation fuel to scale? What are some of those tools? So there's been a few projects launched from those early efforts. In addition to that, we partner closely with IATA because they represent all of our customers, and they've been working on this for years as well. We also partnered with the U.S. government when they did the First Movers Coalition. And so they had different industry groups, and we became a sector champion for aviation and really trying to help channel the energy and the, you know, global interest in sustainable aviation fuel. So we were working on that particular coalition. In addition to IATA and some of those, there's also in the US as well as in Europe, a number of coalitions forming around the policies that need to happen. And so we end up getting engaged in those. And again, it becomes a coalition, not just of aviation, but of the fuel suppliers, of our suppliers, of our customers, as well as the corporate. So you really kind of, you know, go from a center stage of like, this is about aviation to quickly, no, it's about everyone because we all utilize this form of transportation. So we did some things, you know, at the national level, when you think about the blender's tax credit and the IRA, it was embedded in that. So we had a lot of work that we did with A4A, as well as all of our airline partners, as well as some of the fuel providers. So that was a good example of a federal one. And then in Washington state, most recently, we were able to work with the IAM, with Boeing, with Alaska, with Microsoft, with Amazon. There was a number of different parties in our community that were advocating for the low-cost fuel standard to come into play here. And that came into play in a really, really functional way. I think it's going to actually set apart Washington state in that particular area of scaling SAF. We're fortunate to have a lot of clean energy in this part of the world. And so that's an important part of producing clean energy. So that's, you know, that was something that we had worked across a number of parties. And then the last one that I'll highlight is a group called International Aviation Environmental Group. And that's a group of suppliers to the aviation industry. So very cross-functional, cross all of the different aspects of building a product. And we have a number of work streams that we work with them. One of the more recent ones is really helping across our suppliers on 100% compatible, 100% SAF compatible airplane. And what that really is that by 2030, we plan to make sure that every single airplane that gets delivered will be able to be compatible with having 100% sustainable aviation fuel put into it and any variation thereof. So we know that by 2030, there will not be 100% SAF, but our products last for more than, you know, 20, 25 years. So we need to do that now so that we can be available and be ready for that 2050 timeframe. So that takes all of our suppliers and all of us kind of rowing in the same direction. And that group is helping us with that activity.
Yeah, that must be such a huge issue, having such a long life cycle to develop your product and for them to be in the market. It must be a sustainability nightmare.
Yeah, I think it's good to have the long vision. And so that's why it was really important to start now, because a lot of times people lose track of how long of a life airplanes have and how complicated it is to change everything over. One of my other, you know, fellow sustainability people, we were talking about the inertia of infrastructure, and airplanes are part of that infrastructure. So, you know, we've got up to 30,000 airplanes that would have to be turned over. And between Boeing and Airbus, you know, on good years, we produce 1,500. So that's a really long time to actually get it to the most fuel efficient airplanes out there, much less wanting to make sure that you're you're changing an energy source. So that's why sustainable fuels becomes a really important tool in that, you know, the inertia of infrastructure solution space. It can be a drop-in, and by dropping in, you don't have to change all of your infrastructure, including your aircraft at this point.
And that kind of brings me to the next topic, which is, you know, metrics. How are you quantifying all this those efforts? And then, you know, once you've kind of done kind of a general, you know, life cycle analysis on these long planes, we'd love to hear about that. But yeah, let's speak more generally about metrics first.
Yeah. So from the metrics, you know, again, from starting out as an organization, we had to pick what was material. And when we, one of the materiality elements is the climate solutions or climate technology. And so we put some of those targets out there, sustainable aviation fuel being one. And then what do we have, like what is directly applicable to the Boeing company? And that's making sure that the airplane, like I said, can cover all aspects of it. So we've got metrics to try and get to that point. In addition, we know that innovation and fuel burn is another metric. Another one that, you know, is a partnership, if you will, with our customers, and that is fleet replacement. And so as the more we produce, the faster our customers are able to meet their goals. And so, you know, moving to that next generation or most current generation of sustainable aerodynamic flying, fuel efficient flying, is something that we help with. So getting our system healthy, getting our supply chain and our deliveries to our customers is a really important part of that. And so we can track that. We can track our progress to the 100% compatible airplane. And then we also are tracking that energy transition as well. So we built a tool that's out on sustainabilitytogether.aero. And it's a public website that has a couple of different things. One of them is a SAF dashboard. And that's really to help people know what is being produced and what is in the hopper, what is in the project phase to grow the volumes of SAF. So that's one tool. And then another tool that really is helpful to airlines as they develop their, you know, net zero plans, talking to policymakers as they're making policies to help, you know, the entire world decarbonize. We have a tool called Cascade that we built, and we're building it internally with public information. So basically we put our efforts into it by compiling and sharing a dynamic visible tool that anybody can use. So today, any of you can go out there, design your future assumption of what aviation might look like, and see what the different levers might do to actually getting to net zero, which I think is a really powerful conversation starter. You know, back to the earlier question of how do you talk to your customers? Every time we engage with them or the policymakers or financial companies, I think they find it very informative to be able to utilize this tool and just see the dynamic nature of what your assumptions might drive out.
Yeah, this group knows, you know, I've mentioned it before, when I first started doing all of the sustainability efforts for the organization, I'm like, oh, we switched to glass and paper, we use less plastic and everything will be fine, but no.
Yeah. It's bigger than that, yeah.
It's much
fossil
bigger.
Fossil fuel is everywhere.
Yeah. It really is. And, you know, once you start understanding, you know, even like the coatings on paper and things like that, a lot of it is about educating the consumer as much as it is around the sustainability efforts themselves, which I'm sure is very challenging.
Yes. Yeah. Now, there was a great article that, you know about it intuitively, but I think when I read the article, it really dawned on me that it is really, really challenging. And the article was A Day Without Fossil Fuel. And so this one reporter decided to try and do that. And he said, as soon as I got out of bed and put my feet on the floor, I had already violated it because it was carpeting or carpet coatings. Or, you know, so it is a really challenging, it kind of, fossil fuel is everywhere, and the byproducts of producing it are in everything that we do. So it's a challenge.
It really is. Right when we get out of bed. So can you talk a bit more about your approach to life cycle analysis, especially with these huge planes? There's a lot there.
Yeah. Now we utilize life cycle analysis as a tool, and we have actually for a number of years. I would say that it's moved up in the trade space because you need to, you know, a lot of what we have to do is obviously very unique in terms of the environments, that our products operate in. So some things, there's just not any options out there. But when we're looking at the life cycle, we're looking at it from the materials that we utilize, and then that makes decisions into defining and designing a new product. And as you move through the life cycle of the actual product from design to making material and then supplier selections, you move into the operations. And we also do work that helps the life cycle, if you will, from an operational standpoint. So whether that is, you know, being able to provide better navigational performance tools so that you can optimize how you actually operate the airplane, or working on various improvements that you can do in maintenance to reduce waste and reduce the use of hazardous materials as you go through the maintaining of the product. And then we also have work in the end of service aspect. So another ABC of the industry is a group called AFRA, which is a recycling entity that is really based on sustainable end of service practices. So, you know, lots of hazardous waste embedded into a utilized airplane. And so how do you take that apart when the service life is done and recycle it? And so, from cradle to cradle, I guess, it would be the full circularity, but from cradle to grave, we really do look at the life cycle all the way through it. And you know, for us, AFRA, that joining and forming that organization was something that we did probably almost 20 years ago, 15 or so years ago. And so we have been thinking about it for a long time, you know, recognizing and working on these problems as an industry. I think it just fortunately with the visibility, we're able to do more when you're able to have a platform and a group of people that want to come together and take it to the next level. And I think that's where we are. Like, a lot of good baseline work was done in a number of these different spaces. And now we have the opportunity to really, you know, elevate it, if you will.
Okay. So, looking to the future, as I'm sure Boeing is always doing. So how do you want your sustainability journey to evolve from here? And just for those of you in the audience, we're going to open the floor to questions after this. So start thinking up your questions and getting them into the chat. So, all right, Sheila, go for it. Future.
The future. I think the future for me, I would really love to see that we will effectively scale as an industry and work across industries. And that sounds really, like, you know, opaque. And what does that really mean? For us, we've improved the sustainability, the fuel burn of our products over the last, since the jet age, by 70%. So that last 30%, like the last, I like to say, you know, the last 5 pounds that you're trying to lose is really, really hard. And so we continue to do what we do well, which is the innovation part. So I want to see that our innovation has kind of a strong cadence. And so we almost could set goals that every year we have improvements. That would be one goal. The next one would be that we actually scale and change that energy. So changing over to sustainable fuels on a pace that gets us to net zero 2050. And that we find innovations and aviation or aerospace in general is such a long cycle business that I think we also have to, you know, have the goal of 2050, but really set aspirations. I think you unlock innovation when you think beyond. And so setting those goals out to 2100, which sounds ridiculous, but when it's, you know, 10 years to develop a product, so you start today and you get it out the door in 10 years, that's a long time. So we only have 8 more of those cycles, if you will. So you really have to think, you know, to the left and back instead of the right and forward. And so I think having those types of setting those types of strategies and having that long duration thinking is what's going to get us, you know, pull us all the way through.
All right. So do we have anyone who would like to raise their hand and jump in, or you are welcome? Oh, all right. Amy, go for it.
I always have questions. I guess one of the things in my role, I am responsible for Scope 3 emissions, and we are just in the process of moving our Scope 3 emissions from sort of an average calculation to a hybrid, looking at our suppliers. And I was wondering if you had any insights into tools and advice in getting and tracking information from your suppliers related to your Scope 3 emissions. I know you touched on it a little bit, but I was wondering if you could maybe go a little deeper.
Yeah. So I'll kind of give you a sense of our total emissions, and that'll explain a little bit of why we haven't gone there yet. About 94% of our total emissions is our Scope 3 products in use. And so that becomes, if you kind of Pareto it out, that becomes where we spend a lot of our time. Our operations are about 1% of our total emissions bucket. And our suppliers are probably another 3%. And then you also have our different parts of our business that kind of comprise the other slice of products in use. So we have started with our suppliers, but as I mentioned, we've got thousands of them all over the world. And really we're kind of doing building blocks. And so we haven't gotten to Scope 3 emissions is kind of the short answer. But we're working with them through these different, you know, groups to try and figure out how we don't disrupt an already disrupted supply chain by just levying another requirement, but stay in check as well with some of the compliance requirements that are coming in from governments around the world too. So probably not the most satisfying answer, but we're on the journey along with you, and there hasn't been an easy answer, I guess would be my response on that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, who's up next? Oh, Alina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think one question I have is, how are you thinking about balancing just all the reporting obligations coming through in Europe and pretty much everywhere? With kind of a lot of this ambitious, you know, strategy setting that you've outlined?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's getting done in parallel, because I would say Europe tends to be first. And so watching, learning, and seeing how they're evolving their requirements, we end up, because we do have operations in a number of different countries, in some countries we're big enough that we actually have to comply with those. So one is we're in a little bit of an observation and learning phase, and simultaneously we continue to report, and what you'll find in our sustainability report is we report to a number of different groups, and that probably where you were going with it is it is onerous. You know, these different reporting requirements need to start to come together, and I do think, for good or bad, I do think some of the requirements at the governmental level, instead of just everybody is judging and reporting and assessing you on their metric, I think some of that will start to perhaps drive some of the alignment. The hard part is the various parts of the world. So as you probably know, the SEC coming due here, I think we'll learn more soon. But right now we're just, I'm going to get all the different ones that we report to, not quite right, but we do CDP, MSCI, Dow Jones, I want to say GRI. So it's a lot of work. So we're hoping that it'll start to diminish a little bit, or converge is probably a better way of thinking about it.
Felix, do you want to jump in?
Sure. Hi, Sheila. Felix Slew here, University of Chicago. I know it's early, but you know, there's some news reports about electric airplanes. Is Boeing looking to that mode of transportation in the future? You know, far future. Of course, it's very early in the game, but it's a game changer potentially.
Yep. Well, actually, we've invested in a company that's called Wisk, and so that product is out there. It's probably the most tested of any of those electric airplanes at this point in time. The twist on that one also has to do with autonomy. And right now, you know, again, the tool that I mentioned, Cascade, if you were to go out and take a look at that, what you'll see is that it's a small part of the solution set. It really is probably solving for ground transportation or helicopters. So it's kind of a different space, but I think there's a ton of learning and a ton of technical advancement that we're gonna understand, including how it operates and interfaces with the airspace ecosystem. So that's a really important thing for both big airplanes as well as those small airplanes, on how they actually interact. So we're engaged in the in that part of it as well, designing the system. But I think it's, unless there is some breakthrough, and especially, you know, University of Chicago, you guys can do a breakthrough in battery power. Right now, the challenge is that, you know, liquid fuel burns off and it's incredibly energy dense. And so batteries right now are just, they never, once they deplete, you don't actually get lighter. And so they have a pretty limited range. And so we'll see, I'm sure, you know, innovations will happen, but right now they're not going to be a 737 size airplane anytime soon.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
That's so interesting. I hadn't thought about the battery weight being such a huge issue. Kevin, did you want to jump in with a question?
Yeah, thank you for answering that question. I kind of wanted to add on to that. We're seeing so many huge investments in green and blue hydrogen as a next fuel source. Do you foresee, or I guess if I were to ask, what do you think is going to be more viable in the future, the hydrogen or the electric as an alternative to fossil fuels when it comes to airline travel?
Now, when it comes to aviation, this is kind of where I think about 2100 versus 2050. I think for 20 through 2050, because technically it's only about 27 more years, 26 if we fast forward to 2024. And so I think the liquid, you know, sustainable aviation fuel combined with the Jet A, because it is a 50-50 mix right now, but it'll eventually be 100%. I think the inertia of infrastructure is a really good way to think about why that is going to be incredibly hard to change. Fast forward into the future, we're continuing to look at, you know, hydrogen is produced with excess clean energy. And so all of the grid, you know, the policymakers in the world need to figure out what needs to change first and what are the biggest impacts. And so hydrogen's really another energy carrier. And so it's kind of an alternative. You have hydrogen fuel cells, you have gaseous, you have liquid hydrogen. And so in some respects, it has a place and we're working on what that might be, but it might be some other energy source too. So I think we're trying to keep our aperture open that there isn't necessarily one answer into the future. From a viability, it gets to what I said before on the energy and the batteries. I think until we get lighter batteries, that's going to be a big part, because people want to go further than 100 miles. And the safety aspect of it is it needs to be able to land, you know, anywhere and get charged. And then from a hydrogen standpoint, again, you know, I'll give you a little data point is that all of the fuel, so pretend like you can put it in any fuel tank, you didn't have to change the airplane. In order to get hydrogen into Heathrow, you would need a hydrogen truck going in to service all of the flights that come out of Heathrow every 90 seconds. And as you know, hydrogen is one of those fuels that is really very unstable. So you need to make sure that you hold it in a stable manner. It works best when it's close to the production and the operation. So I don't think, again, back to infrastructure, that it'll happen anytime soon, but we're definitely working to investigate all of these different pathways because we can't stay stagnant and we have to recognize that, you know, getting to that future is really important. So I think there's going to be different fuels for different applications as we try to unlock ourselves from fossil fuels in general. Hopefully that helps me answer it.
Yeah, very insightful answer. Thank you.
I just had visions of all of that going into Heathrow, and that's a lot. That's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then back to it doesn't substitute in, and it takes, you know, three times the volume. So you have to change every single airplane. So a 737 would be, you know, much larger in order to actually hold the hydrogen. So it's just there's a lot of devils in the details there, analysis that needs to be done as we move forward. And that changes gates, and then that changes airports, and then that, you know, and it has a ripple effect into the ecosystem.
Yeah. And just thinking about airports that are in, you know, big urban areas with high density, it's just, how do you do that? I don't know that you could.
It's hard because you're definitely, I think I saw a question in the chat, you know, it's not in my backyard. So you have to open up and rethink airports. And that means affecting communities around the airport. So it gets into the social aspect very quickly. And same is true with trains and roads and all of the things that we're trying to transition.
And that question in the chat is, part of sustainability is getting everyone to buy into a change, with business cases not always showing immediate ROI and the positive for sustainability. How can we get more involved and have business cases show more of the right thing to do rather than a quick return on investment? I know we have some assessment tools such as SIFT, but they do not tell the whole story that management needs to agree to a change, at least not yet.
Right. And that's it's a great question. And we had actually worked with a university to help us build what are the evaluation tools? How can we rethink it? Because traditionally, especially big companies look at ROI. And ROI discounts things really quickly. So if you're taking a long-term view, all of a sudden it never makes sense to make that change in the near term because you're counting on a long-term benefit, basically. So we've really tried to rethink how we look at some of those business cases to make sure that we're thinking longer term. And it is hard. I would have to say that there isn't a quick fix or an easy answer, but some of it is the culture of a company. There's companies out there that have kind of top down said, this is how we're going to look at it, and it's going to be a lot longer term, or this doesn't maybe pencil out as the best economic, but it's the right thing to do. So long term for sustainability of our company, we're going to do this. But every company has a different way of looking at it. And so we're trying to bake it into our finance evaluation process. But I wish I had an easy answer to tell you how to do it. But I think it's going to be different for every company in terms of how they evaluate it. But definitely keeping the long term in mind and thinking about it more as an annuity of improvement versus a NPV of it is critical to actually making that type of an investment.
All right, fantastic. I think we'll go ahead and wrap there. So Sheila, really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. I know everyone enjoyed the discussion and getting insights from you, and you know, aviation touches all of our lives so deeply. It's great to learn a bit more about it and understand that things are being done, and we're heading toward a more sustainable future there.
Absolutely. Great. Well, thanks for inviting me to speak, and thanks for everybody's engagement. I love the questions because they're things that we're wrestling with too. So we're all on the journey together. So thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. And thanks to all of you who joined us this afternoon. Really appreciate you taking the time, and I will send out the recording shortly. Thanks so much, Sheila.
Thanks, Lee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.